Hello and welcome to the Eating Disorder Therapist podcast. This is a podcast to help you find peace with food and overcome disordered eating. And I'm Harriet Frew, aka the Eating Disorder Therapist. And I'm so excited to share with you all kinds of stories, tips, information and guest interviews to help you on your journey in finding peace with food. So thank you so much for listening today. Now today I'm talking to Jade Barber, and Jade is the creator and host of the Students of Mind podcast, a mental health advocate, peer supporter and entrepreneur based in the Los Angeles area. Since a young age, Jade has been diagnosed and living with several mental illnesses, including anxiety, depression and anorexia. And although she is not a licensed mental health professional, Jade's experience as a patient, family member and friend of individuals with mental illness has driven her to share her experiences and insights. And through the Students of Mind podcast and across social media, Jade shares her mental health and recovery journey. Jade's podcast was created in March of 2020, and on the show, Jade covers various mental health related topics through interviews with experts and healers, as well as survivors, people like herself who live every day with mental illness. And Students of Mind aims to normalize talking openly about mental health, removing the many barriers that exist to receiving mental health education and resources, reducing the stigma and taboos that exist around mental health and mental illness, and expressing that everyone has mental health that needs to be tended to, just as we tend to our physical health. So in today's episode, Jade is going to talk about her experience of eating disorder recovery as a Black woman, delving into her journey through the different treatment levels in her eating disorder healing journey. Jade is absolutely passionate about us all prioritizing mental health as much, if not more, than our physical health. And she's going to explain how she personally does this with deep awareness and self-care practices. Jade is also going to dive into how she works on developing a more positive body image, something that is challenging for us all. So looking forward to this conversation. Let's get to it.
Hi, Jade. Great to have you here today and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
Oh, so Jade, you're on the other side of the world in Los Angeles.
Yes.
So what's it like in Los Angeles today?
Today it is beautifully sunny, clear skies. It's been actually raining here a lot, which is kind of unusual, but today we have a break from the rain and it's nice and sunny and warm out. My dog, actually, right before I hopped on, she wouldn't come inside because she wanted to just stay outside and sunbathe. It's one of those days today.
Oh, lovely. And what kind of dog do you have?
I have a Doberman Pit mix. She looks more like a Doberman. Super sweet.
Oh, wow. Now, that sounds like a really intriguing combination, actually.
Yes. Yes, very energetic.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad she's enjoying the sun.
Yes, yes.
So, Jade, could I firstly get you to introduce yourself to the listeners, please?
Yeah, so I'm Jade. I am 24 years old. What I do two things right now. I have a podcast called Students of Mind, where I talk about mental health. I interview like mental health experts, but also individuals like myself who live with mental illness, kind of to get like a full scope of the topic that I talk about. And just to kind of, I know it's important to not only get the provider perspective of these things, it's important to get the perspective of the people who are actually living with these things. So that's my podcast. Through the podcast, I also do something called Sister Sessions. It's like one-on-one coaching to help people identify their mental health needs, and then we look for resources to meet those needs. My day job, I'm a peer support specialist. I work for an organization that assists homeless youth throughout the LA area, and my job there is to basically like case management, like working one-on-one with the youth to help them with employment, mental health, housing, and yeah, just to help them get connected to whatever resources they need. outside of that, I'm a nature girl. I love being outdoors with my dog and going on hikes and going to the beach. That's part of the reason why I love LA is because you can go to the beach, but you can also like go to the mountains to hike and see snow. So that's part of the reason why I love it here. But yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing. And it sounds like you're pretty busy, aren't you, with all your different projects? And I noticed from your podcast, you've been going from sort of around the time of the pandemic. Is that right? You sort of started up in March 2020?
Yeah, I started right when everything closed down. I initially wanted to like start a mental health support group for the students at my school to like have some support during this strange time of the pandemic that we really didn't know when was going to end. And when I brought it up to my psychology professor at the time, she was like, that could be great, but since you're still in school and like learning everything, it might be hard to create the safest space that you can when you're like holding potentially intense content from people. She suggested that I do a podcast and like interview mental health experts and go the route of like education and like sharing this with the students at my school to start educating people more about mental health. That's kind of how I got started.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible, really. And I love the way that, I know you said that you have some experts on, but it sounds like your podcast as well is really representing kind of voices of people that are living with mental health struggles, mental health illness, and you're really kind of giving a voice to those people. And I guess really sort of breaking down stigma and help educating people in such a profound way.
Yes, that is definitely the goal, because I myself have lived with mental illness my whole life. And so I grew up not being around anyone else who was kind of as comfortable as I was talking about the fact that I lived with these mental health issues. I wanted to really like be an example that it's okay to talk about these things, because on the podcast, I open up about my own journey and experiences a little bit, just to kind of show that it's okay to share these things and be open about it. And like, nothing bad is going to happen if you are open about these things.
Could you tell us a little bit about your own journey? Because it's obviously really inspired, I guess, your passion and purpose in the way that you're serving others today. But I'm guessing that you've probably been through some quite dark times yourself to sort of come to this place. So could you share a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, I've been dealing with mental health struggles for as long as I can remember. In the beginning of my life, I didn't know they were mental health things. I thought that I was literally physically sick when I was younger. All the time I would get like these stomach aches, colds and things all the time, where I would like go to the nurse's office and they would send me home, and it was only a day where I was feeling those things and the next day I would be fine. And my parents didn't really understand what it was. I remember my dad thinking I was just trying to like get out of school, but that really wasn't the case. And then later down the line, when I turned about 12, that's when I saw my first therapist, and I described to her these experiences, and she was like, Jade, that's anxiety. What you are experiencing is the physical manifestation of anxiety. And that was at like 12 or 13, that was my first time making that connection. And I feel like from there, I really started to learn about myself and the way that I experience life. For me, kind of like my main diagnoses are anxiety, a panic disorder, and depression. The most severe ones are the anxiety and the panic disorder, especially when I was younger. I would have panic attacks all the time, and I was a really shy, anxious kid. So there were a lot of instances like meeting new people or being in scenarios where there were a lot of people where I would get those stomach aches or headaches or things. And it wasn't because I was sick, it was my anxiety. It wasn't until I was 12 that I started getting support around it. And what led to me getting support was my parents getting divorced. When I was 11 or 12, my parents separated. It was like devastating to me. I think part of the reason was because like my parents didn't fight when they told us they weren't going to be together anymore. It was just a lot of confusion because it was like, well, you guys didn't fight, so why are things ending? I was very confused and sad and started experiencing symptoms of depression, like being sad all the time, not being able to enjoy time with friends when I was with them, like always thinking about my parents or like anxieties I had about school or just like a big thing that I deal with is like abandonment issues. So like feeling scared that someone's going to leave. And around the time when my parents split up, that's when those fears got really heightened. They put me in therapy because I expressed some of these symptoms of depression and anxiety. And my mom, she has dealt with mental health stuff for a lot of her life. She luckily knew that what you do when a child is experiencing these things is like you get help. You go find a therapist or talk to their doctor and see what we can do. We talked to my pediatrician and then got me a therapist. And that's when my like journey of therapy started. I've since that moment at 12 years old, I've been in therapy. And I think that kind of sums up like the beginning of my life. In like high school, I developed an eating disorder. I think it started before high school for sure, like disordered eating and unhealthy patterns around eating, but it really came to a head in high school because I was going to a school for dance, and the culture of dance is very body focused, and there's a lot of unhealthy habits promoted within the space of dance, especially the type of dance that I was doing, ballet and modern. And it's a very toxic environment in terms of like body image. That's kind of when my eating disorder started. And then in 2015 and 16 is when I started getting treatment for my eating disorder, which I feel like we'll get into this, but a big part of getting into eating disorder treatment was realizing that like I wasn't going to be in treatment with people that looked like me, because a lot of people that look like me don't have access to the treatment I was getting. And it took me a while to be able to be like, what I'm experiencing is real and valid. Because yeah, there was maybe one person in treatment through my whole time in treatment that was also Black. And I don't know, that's like hard because it just really makes you feel kind of invalidated. And my last time being in treatment was about 2 years ago. I did not expect to go into treatment again, but I was very realistic with myself about the fact that I had started going down a path that was a very slippery slope again with my eating and engaging in eating disorder behaviors. And so I took it upon myself to tell my therapist what was going on. And then we found a treatment center and I went into treatment for the first time in, it had been like 4 or 5 years. And honestly, it was amazing. It was the first time I was in treatment. I was fully invested and fully wanting to be there and open to all of things that they offered because I really wanted to get better. It like was different this time because it wasn't my parents putting me into treatment. It was me putting myself into treatment, and I really wanted to get better. So it was honestly a great experience for me. And it was hard, of course, but very transformative and healing, and led to where I am today, which is very solid in food and hunger and fullness cues, and body image struggles are there and they come and go, but I'm in a place where they don't like floor me or ruin my day when they come up. I can acknowledge that they're there, do whatever I need to do to cope with them, and then like move on with my day. So, and I have this last round of treatment, I think, to thank for that.
Okay, well, thanks for sharing, Jade. It sounds like it's been quite a journey. And I'm just thinking of you, actually. It sounds like you had so many different factors probably coming together, didn't you, that may have made you vulnerable to developing an eating disorder, with the struggling a bit with your mental health, perhaps with anxiety and low mood. You then had that trigger of your parents splitting, which sounds like it was really just a very, very difficult thing to deal with. And then I think just being a teenager and then in dance and all the body image stuff, I think you had a lot of things coming together, didn't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think even like school was a trigger because I was such an anxious kid and I had perfectionism. That's the word I should use. I was such, and still am, such a perfectionist that school caused me so much anxiety. And usually the way that translated was I wouldn't have an appetite or I wouldn't want to eat a meal or something. Even when I was younger, that was coming up.
How do you think the eating disorder helped you cope through all of that? I'm guessing as well, you were quite young, weren't you? It's not a very kind of conscious thing, but I'm guessing, was the eating disorder some sort of form of safety and a way to feel some kind of safety and stability and control when a lot of things were really difficult and there were a lot of pressures around you?
Yeah, I think that's very true for me, because even just thinking about my parents, I remember that being a moment where it felt like it was a reality check that I wasn't in control in the ways that I felt I was. And then growing up, the eating disorder was at its worst when I actually moved to California with my mom in 2015 or 16. And she had a fiance out there at the time. And so we moved in with them. And that is when my most severe eating disorder behaviors began. And I think it was because so much was happening that was really out of my control. Like, we were moving, we were starting to live with this new family. I wasn't in school, so making friends was so hard, and I felt out of control around that. So yeah, I just felt like there were so many things in my life at that time that were just happening to me and I had no say in what happened. And I really leaned on the eating disorder during that time.
Yeah, it makes so much sense, doesn't it? Because I guess all your sort of safety and security was just ripped from beneath you, wasn't it? And a big adjustment. And then you talked about the first time you went into treatment for the eating disorder. And you were saying as well, perhaps you didn't look like some of the other people in treatment. And can you talk a bit more about your perspective as being a Black woman getting eating disorder treatment? And perhaps talking a bit more about your own experiences, but also perhaps generalizing a bit in terms of what other people that you have spoken to will sort of describe about treatment.
Before going into treatment, I remember just like hearing that Black people didn't really get eating disorders. When I started having symptoms of the eating disorder, it took a while for myself and my family to identify them as eating disorder behaviors. I remember them saying to other family members, oh yeah, Jade's just being really healthy now. And that definitely wasn't the case. And I think it's not just with eating disorders, it's with mental health in general in Black communities. There's a sense that we are strong, tough as bulls, and don't deal with any mental health issues or anything like that. And I think that's a massive misconception, and it leads to a lot of people not getting the help that they deserve. I was getting those messages prior to experiencing the eating disorder. And then when I did start experiencing the eating disorder, it caused a lot of denial. Like, when my pediatrician at the time was telling me, like, Jade, this is a slippery slope. They're doing things that are really unhealthy for you, and like, you need to change what you're doing. I wouldn't change what I was doing because I was like, oh, this isn't going to hurt me. The results I'm seeing are making me feel good about myself. So it's not going to hurt me. Like, it's fine. But I think if I would have experienced hearing a Black woman's story or just a person of color's story about the eating disorder experience, I would have been more open to hearing my pediatrician out at the time. And then just like with being in treatment, I think the main thing that like the reason why I didn't see people that looked like me is comes down to just access and like access to resources and access to the knowledge about these resources. I was very lucky because I had a mom who unfortunately like dealt with a lot of mental health struggles. When I started dealing with stuff, she knew the route that we were supposed to go. She didn't necessarily know like, oh, eating disorder treatment, but she knew, okay, let's talk to Jade's pediatrician about this and what the next steps are. And I can't say that not just every Black family, but everyone knows that that's what you do when you experience these things. So I feel privileged in the fact that I had a mom that went through these things who kind of knew what to do. And I think this is in Black communities, like mental health is not taken seriously at all. But I would have family members telling me like, oh, just eat a burger and you'll be fine. Or like, just eat a big plate of pasta and you'll be fine. You just need to get over. I'll be honest, at the time, like I was a teen going through this really intense stuff. Like I did not have the energy to educate them in the moment. I just felt small in that moment and tried to move to the next conversation because it was so uncomfortable. But that is like the type of ignorance that exists and is really tough to deal with when you're trying to get better.
And this whole kind of, you sort of saying in the Black community as well, perhaps this invalidation or not even understanding or appreciating that kind of mental health is a thing sometimes and having to be almost like tough as balls or whatever.
Yes.
Is that very much in the community itself, or do you feel as well that's kind of projected on you as well from just other people in society?
I think, if I'm understanding your question, I think it comes from like, as Black people, we had to be extra strong, like stronger than what is even humanly possible because of the things that we have been through throughout history. To me, it really comes from a place of like survival. Throughout history, we just had to be, like you're saying, strong as a bull to get through all of the discrimination and the racism and the hate that we have experienced, I mean, even to this day. So I feel like that's where it comes from. Like, I don't think it comes from a place of wanting to invalidate experiences or wanting to make someone feel bad about what they're experiencing. I truly think it comes from a place of like wanting to make the other person feel safe in that as Black people throughout history, we have defied the odds of physics. Even if you just think about slavery, like going through that and some people coming out the other side, I think that's where it really comes from. I don't think it necessarily comes from a malicious or wanting to put someone down place.
Time for a short advertisement break. Are you tired of being tired and fighting with your body while the emotional eating or binging continues? You are not alone. Emotional eating is not your fault, yet it's something you deserve to fully overcome. Are you ready to gain massive insight into your emotional binge triggers and understand the roots of why you are self-sabotaging with food and body? You'll want to check out emotional eating digestive and hormone expert Amber Romaniak's The No Sugar Coating podcast. With over 400 episodes diving deep into emotional eating and binge triggers, female hormone and gut issues, weight blocks, cravings, and the physical, emotional, and energetic connections to our triggers. After overcoming her own food addiction, binge eating, and emotional eating behaviors fully, and now helping thousands of women in the last 10 plus years, she provides a deep level of knowledge to help assist you forward on your journey to food and body freedom and beyond. This podcast will help you build a newfound level of awareness that you may have never had before. And there's no diets, no quick fixes, and no band-aid approaches here. This podcast is about building self-love, acceptance, confidence, and becoming in tune with your relationship with food, thoughts, symptoms, and it will help you start to take your power back. If you truly want to feel free from emotional eating and take a listen to the No Sugar Coating podcast, visit amberapproved.ca/podcast. Link is in the show notes to start listening and take the next life-changing step on your journey. You can also listen on iTunes, Spotify, or any podcast app. You're not alone and you can break free. You can also check out a wide variety of resources, a free emotional eating quiz, one-to-one coaching support, and more about body freedom at amberapproved.ca/.
Yeah, no, it makes so much sense, doesn't it? It's more about survival, isn't it, really? Is it true as well, sort of within Black communities as well, that more like Black children might experience perhaps, you know, more likely to experience, I guess, racism, maybe more likely as well to have experienced adverse childhood experiences, which are then going to leave people understandably more vulnerable to developing mental health issues, anxiety, depression, eating disorders, the whole spectrum?
Yeah. When I learned about ACEs in my psychology class, I found it so interesting and so, like, it feels like such a profound study because it kind of helps people get an explanation for why they are the way they are as adults. When I was, like, researching more into ACEs, I found a lot of, like, interviews with Black individuals and, like, I feel like ACEs for the Black community is such a profound tool because as Black people, we do go through a lot in our childhoods. And I think having the knowledge that those adverse experiences or those challenging experiences can lead to some of the mental health implications that we experience. For me, it's like comforting knowledge. I like to have an explanation for things, and it gives me like an explanation and action steps I can take to kind of mitigate whatever effects those ACEs have had in my adult life. So I love looking into ACEs and like educating people about ACEs because it's really like a profound study.
So Jade, it sounds like when you went to the sort of last treatment for the eating disorder, you said in a way that that was very different. You were feeling much more motivated. It sounds like that you weren't doing it for your parents. You were doing that round of treatment for you. It sounds like you're coming from a much more kind of empowered, taking responsibility, proactive place. Can you say a bit more about that experience?
Yeah. Going into this round of treatment, I told my therapist that I was really struggling at the time, and I was talking to my therapist about it, and we kind of identified anxiety and depression, things that had gotten more severe, and didn't really talk about eating disorder stuff. But when I started the process of like finding like an intensive outpatient program, I was talking to my primary care physician on the phone. And she was asking me about food. And in my head, I was like, that doesn't matter right now. I'm struggling with anxiety right now. But when she was asking me questions and I was responding, I was like, whoa, these are behaviors I was doing years ago. And I didn't even realize I was doing them again. That was like a big wake-up call. That call ended in me finding a treatment center that was like an hour away from where I live. And I was terrified, honestly, to go back into it because I thought I was just going to get triggered into engaging in worse eating disorder behaviors. I was really terrified to go back into the environment of eating disorder treatment because when I was in treatment as a teen, unfortunately, while I was in treatment, I adopted more eating disorder behaviors because some of the treatment centers I went to weren't great, and there were clients engaging in behaviors on the unit, and I would see it, and then I would be like, oh, okay, that's something I can do, and then I would do it too. I was very nervous to go back into a treatment environment, but the treatment center that I found was more holistic than any other treatment center that I've been to. And so I figured that would be different. And it was. At this treatment center, I was used to going to treatment and only talking about food and nutrition, and also like a little bit of anxiety and depression and regulating emotions. But at this treatment center, we talked about the food aspect, but also like the movement aspect, which was very like profound to me, because I was always given the impression that movement was like, that's just off limits when you're in eating disorder treatment. Like, you just have to throw it out the window and try not to give in to the obsession, because for me, movement was an obsession. And so when I went to this new treatment facility and they were like having whole groups on movement and talking about movement and literal like movement groups where we would go outside and move our bodies in different ways, that was so different to me and so cool to me, because I've wanted to figure out a way that I can make my relationship with movement healthy. That was like a huge plus to that treatment center, is that we talked about movement very often and like talked about what it can look like in recovery. That was like a big plus to this treatment center. I think another plus was I was used to like treatment centers only focusing on the food, and I felt like that made my obsession with food worse. This new treatment center, we talked about food, but it was more about talking about our emotions and our core beliefs and the things that kind of lead us to cope with food. Like, we talked more about the underlying things than the symptom of the eating disorder. I think that's what I needed, because I got to a place where I was like very educated around nutrition and what healthy eating looks like and what listening to your hunger and fullness cues looks like. I got to a good place with that. But my struggle was like learning how to deal with the underlying emotions that would lead to me acting out with eating disorder symptoms, learn how to cope in ways that wasn't manipulating my food. I think that's why this time around it was way more helpful, because I got so many skills and coping skills and just different things I can do instead of using the eating disorder to cope with the intense emotions that I feel.
Yeah, it sounds so helpful, doesn't it? Because I think it kind of is about food if you have an eating disorder, but it's about much deeper things as well, isn't it? And if you don't look at those deeper things, you kind of need to, don't you? And it sounds like that was so helpful. And the movement piece, doesn't it? Like, I think it sounds like you're already introduced to a more sort of perhaps intuitive, kind of joyful way of moving your body, rather than it being connected to what you're eating and much less obsessive compulsive.
Yes, definitely. Joyful movement is how I would describe it. It was so cool. Everyone got to pick a movement activity each week. So one person would pick for the week and we would dive into it, and they would tell us why they like it. But we would have to give a reason outside of like what it does for our bodies, which I thought was really cool. It was truly like a great experience for me. And I still dealt with like meals, because at the time, so it was an IOP program, but I lived there while I did it just because the commute was hard. So I would have all my meals there. And I still struggled some days with finishing meals and like that aspect of eating disorder treatment. I feel like because of how holistic it was, it made it easier to kind of get through those moments.
Thank you for sharing. So I know today, Jade, that you are absolutely passionate about prioritizing mental health and as much as physical health, if not even more. And I know you've already talked about your lovely dog and going for hikes, and it sounds like you have your ongoing therapy. What else do you do to really self-care and prioritize your mental well-being?
Oh, I love self-care. Honestly, I could be doing a little bit better right now. I currently work full-time. This is the first time I've worked a full-time job in my life. And so it's been a big adjustment, and it's been sort of challenging to like balance this job and self-care because I work a 4-10 schedule. So we work 4 days a week, 10-hour days, and those days get really long. What I was struggling with before, but I am doing now, is taking breaks. When I first started this job, I did not take my breaks seriously. And I was like, I don't need them. I can get through the whole day without a break. But no, I love my breaks now. I get one 30-minute break and two 10-minute breaks. And those are really like my time to engage in coping skills and just emotional regulation skills. Because the work I do, it can get really intense and really charged. I mean, working with the homeless population can lead to a lot of like vicarious trauma. It's super important to like take time to cope with whatever content that you are exposed to in the day. On my breaks, I of course have one break for, I use two breaks for eating. And then one break I use for just either going for a walk or like sitting in my car and doing a meditation, just really trying to reset my nervous system. Like something I also sometimes do during that break is put my face in like cold water, splash cold water on my face. Something that I've been loving is vagus nerve stimulation. A vagus nerve is the nerve in your throat, and it really contributes to anxiety, and so stimulating it can have like a calming effect. And I will sometimes like go in my car and just hum, and that's a really good way to stimulate the vagus nerve. And after I like hum for a few minutes, I'll literally feel like a different person. Like I'll feel so relaxed and I had a reset. So breaks are like one of my main forms of self-care right now. And then again, just being in nature, and like one of my favorite things to do on the weekends is to like go on a hike in the forest and listen to the trees and breathe with the trees. I think breath is like my most valuable coping skill and form of self-care. I've taken several like breathwork workshops and classes, and it's really my anchor. I feel like breath is such a great coping skill to have because you always have your breath. Like it's not going anywhere. You can always access it, and it doesn't take a lot of effort to be able to breathe in a way that will calm you down. That's another big self-care thing for me is my breath. Yeah, just like doing things that bring me joy and like tap into like my inner child, going to like museums or the beach or watching a cartoon or something. I feel like those are also forms of self-care that I engage in a lot.
Oh, thank you for sharing, Jade. And it sounds like you're very proactive, actually, aren't you? Because you don't get many breaks. But it sounds like you're very conscious and intentional, actually, in terms of really thinking about how you are looking after yourself in those little snippets of time. I can imagine with your job as well, I'm sure it's hugely rewarding, but also probably hugely challenging as well, isn't it? I'm sure pretty intense as well at times.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why I have the kind of self-care systems that I have in place now, because when I first started the job, they weren't in place and it took a huge toll on me and my mental health. So definitely learned that having these things in place make me better able to show up for the job in the way that I need to.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that, because I think it's really helpful for the listeners as just to hear really how intentional we have to be sometimes with prioritizing our mental health, because of it would be so easy, wouldn't it, for all of us, like, you know, just get scrolling on your phone or I don't know, like give yourself more stimulation and perhaps why inadvertently kind of give oneself more stress. Thank you for sharing that. So Jade, the last bit I wanted to ask you about as well was just about kind of how you sort of manage body image. Obviously, that's a kind of big piece often in eating disorder recovery. And I wondered as well if you had anything kind of from being a Black woman as well in recovery and anything around body image that would be really helpful to share with the listeners that may be slightly different from how other people may experience body image issues.
Yes, I think for me, something that really changed the way I thought about my body was reading a book called Fearing the Black Body. And it's basically just about the history of diet culture and the image of bodies throughout time. And it really helped somewhat get out of the mindset of this like very thin body as my ideal body. Like that was my ideal body. And to read the book and to see that throughout time, that ideal body has changed so much. And the image I had in my brain didn't really have any meaning, really. It's just that happened to be the body that was in during the time that I was struggling. And it really helped me reality check on the fact that your body is not an indicator of your health. And there are so many different factors that contribute to how your body looks. And part of that is race, like, or just kind of like heritage, like where you're from and your ethnicity and the body type that generally people in that ethnicity have. Like, there's so many different factors that contribute to the way that your body looks. Reading that book really helped me. And I think also like learning that as I get older, like my body's not gonna look how it looked when I was in middle school. Like I know that that's kind of silly to say, but I think I was really, up until like this last round of treatment, I was really holding on to this juvenile body. And that was the image in my head that was like the ideal body for me. And I really had to come to terms with the fact that like I am an adult now. I'm not going to look the same as I looked in middle school or even high school. And that's totally fine and totally normal. So coming to kind of those realizations have really helped me feel better with body image. But I come up against challenges like almost every day. One of the challenges that I'm dealing with a lot right now is like people at work being on diets and like being very vocal about those diets. And they'll talk about why they're going to the gym and how much weight they're losing, what they're eating so they'll lose more weight. And that's really hard for me to hear. All I can do right now is like remove myself from those conversations because I don't feel comfortable to be like, hey, this isn't a safe conversation to be having right now. So that's a struggle. And then also, and I think this is very common in Black families, I have family members that'll like straight up just tell me, oh, your legs look fat. But they don't mean it in a negative way. Like my great grandmother, she passed away 2016, but she would always like her thing when I would come into the house, she would be like, wow, your legs look so fat. And she wasn't saying it in a negative way. Like that was just her way of looking at me and like describing what she saw, because I wasn't fat or I was very small figured at the time when they were saying these things. Of course, those comments at the time made me think, oh my God, like, am I fat? Unfortunately, I felt like that was a bad thing at the time, but now I know they didn't mean anything negative about those comments. That was just their way of talking about how they liked how my body looked, which isn't okay. And I don't think should be normalized at all. But for me to kind of like be settled in those comments, I just had to tell myself, oh, it's like that generation says things like that, and like they don't mean it in a negative way. So yeah, those are like those comments and the diet talk at work are like two ways now that I really have to be proactive in my own journey of healing my body image, because they're two situations where I can't really control what other people are going to say. All I can control is how I'm going to react to it and what I'm going to do with what they said.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that, Jade. And I think so many people are relating and struggling with eating disorders, disordered eating, struggle with exactly what you've just been talking about. Because I think the culture we live in, Western culture, it's just so normalized, isn't it, to be talking about diets, weight loss, wellness, and people don't understand the connection with eating disorders or how damaging that can be. I sometimes think when we're kind of in the echo chamber of intuitive eating and body neutrality and all of this good stuff, it all seems so obvious. But I think still in mainstream culture, it isn't, is it? Not yet, but I think
not yet,
it will be. Oh, well, Jade, I think just so much fantastic information you've shared. Actually, I found this such an interesting conversation. So I'm just wondering if people want to get in touch with you, find out more about the work you're doing, etc., like where are the best places to find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram. I have two. So one is for my podcast, and it's just at Students of Mind. And then I have my personal Instagram where I kind of share mostly on like stories about my personal journey. And that's at Jade M. Barber, Jade spelled J-A-Y-D-E. And then if you're wanting like some mental health resources or to listen to the podcast, you can go to my website. It's just studentsofmind.com. All the episodes are on there. And then there's also like a resource page where you can like find some mental health resources. There's one body image blog post on there. So like if you are interested in finding some resources around body image, there's a whole resource page on that. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I shall make sure, Jade, that all of those links are in the show notes, because I'm sure that a lot of people listening will want to get in touch with you. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me and like opening this space. I love talking about my journey. I hope that it can help people, and then it's healing for me too.
Yeah, well, no, fantastic. I mean, I think you're incredibly inspiring human, and you've obviously been through some really tough times, but you're really sort of channeling that in such a constructive direction and supporting and inspiring so many people. So yeah, just wonderful to hear about the work you're doing.
Thank you so much.
So I hope you enjoyed this conversation just as much as I did. Do go and check out all of Jade's details in the show notes. If you're not following me already on Instagram, do seek me out, @theeatingdisordertherapist_. And for further support with your relationship with food, do go to theeatingdisordertherapist.co.uk. If you enjoyed this podcast, I would be so grateful if you'd follow, rate and review, as it helps it reach so many more listeners. And if you're a professional listening, you may be interested in my online body image and eating disorder courses, which are a great introduction if you are working with these clients. Thank you so much for listening today, and I look forward to sharing another podcast episode with you very soon.